When she was 18, her father gave her the advice she needed to follow her dreams and become a writer. The next day, he had a heart attack and died in her arms. She did become a writer and a business owner and then a wife and mother. Today, after 13 books, a million of them in print, she's an award-winning syndicated columnist, a radio and TV host, and the owner of two successful companies. And now, Elise is here to help you rebuild your life. Stay tuned. This is gonna be good. This is the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours.
Good morning, everybody, or I should say good afternoon. It is after, that's 12, after 12 o'clock. I'm the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750. How can you become a millionaire? I'm trying to think of what would make the most sense, and I see that my blog for the Equifax Finance blog, How You Can Save $1 Million, is starting to trend, and people are going there. We also have a contest going on right now at the Equifax Finance blog about what financial wellness really means to you. You have to upload a picture on what financial wellness means to you. We have this great contest, and you could win $1,000. And while $1,000 isn't $1 million, it is the beginning of your plan to rebuild your life and to get back on track financially. So there are a couple of things I want to talk about today. How you can actually save $1 million, and we'll of course talk about why that may not be enough by the time you get there, but it's a great start no matter what. The second thing I want to talk about is how much money you may be wasting if you have not refinanced, or if you are eligible to refinance now, again, since your house value has gone up, and what you can do about that. There was a new report this week that those individuals who initially refinanced under the Home Affordable Refinance Program, HARP, you've heard me talk about HARP and HARP 2. I don't know if there was ever really a HARP 3, but they made some improvements on HARP 2. Anyway, if you were one of the first in on that program, you may be in for a shock, which is that your interest rate is going up. It is time for those first HARP mortgages to refinance. The super low interest rate that was attached to that plan is now going to tick up, and there are millions of homeowners who are even unaware that that's how those loans were structured. But meanwhile, in Illinois, Georgia, I think it's Michigan and California, those locations are going to see people start to tick up at the beginning, and there could be people, tens of thousands of people, who are unprepared for the extra costs. So those are the two topics for today. How you can save $1 million, and how you may be able to save at least another $50,000, if not another $100,000 or $200,000, by refinancing. 404-872-0750 is the number. Lines are wide open, taking all of your calls about money and real estate, financial wellness. We can talk about it all. 1-800-WSB-TALK, online thinkglink.com, expertrealestatetips.com, and don't forget Twitter at Glink, where I'm already starting to tweet things out. So how can you save $1 million? It's interesting. First, you want to start really young. So if you are in your 20s and you're listening to this show and thinking to yourself, $1 million just sounds like a lifetime away, it doesn't have to be. And it's completely a reasonable goal if you've got 30 years to save. 30 years to save. It may be less than that if you're more aggressive about saving. It may take longer if you're not as aggressive. But the really good news is you don't have to earn six figures to get there. But there are three things that you have to do if you want to be a millionaire whenever it is that you get there, right? You have to have a game plan. Everybody who listens to this show week in and week out knows that I am really big on game plans. I don't think that anything happens by accident. Well, some things do. Usually not the good stuff. I want the good stuff to happen to you. And for the good stuff to happen, you got to have a plan. You've got to have a plan. That's number one. Number two is you've got to think about how you spend in that plan. right? You've got to watch your spending. Making a plan is all well and good, but if you don't actually put it into action, if you don't watch your spending, if you don't make, and this is point three, invest wisely, you're not going to get there. And so many people like the idea of a plan, but then they're not up to the challenge of actually enacting that plan. This strikes me, this is like people who say, oh, I'm going to have a trust, I have a trust, and they put none of the assets into the trust. The trust is a game plan. It is a thing that you can do that will make certain other things happen, which is awesome. But in and of itself, it isn't going to do anything. It isn't going to magically make your life better. It's not going to make you thinner. It's not going to make you smarter. It's not going to make you sexier. It's not going to help you find the right mate. It isn't going to do any of that stuff. The plan is the plan. A trust is a trust. And when you start putting stuff into the trust, right, when you start enacting your plan, when you start making positive moves, that's when the plan becomes a living, breathing thing that allows you to step forward into your future. So if you want to be worth $1 million or more, and you want to save $1 million for retirement, it isn't going to happen overnight. I have no magic pills for you. What I do have is the essence of a plan that you can take, make your own. I can help you watch your spending, and I can guide you so that you're investing wisely for your future. And those are the three things that you need. Formulate a game plan, analyze your spending, pay yourself first, identify what kind of investor you are, bolster your career. These are all the fine pieces that go into the game plan. Watching your spending, invest wisely. So let's talk about that for just a minute, right? What do you need to do? Well, first thing is your yearly goal is going to depend on how old you are, what age you expect to retire, and what is the rate of return on your investments. Okay, so Bankrate has an online calculator, and I will push that out through my Twitter feed in just a minute, @Glink, @GLINK. So if you're 25 years old and you're listening to this show today and you want to be got $1 million for retirement, you need to put away $5,100 a year to reach $1 million by age 65 with an expected return of a very reasonable 7%. If you're 35, you got to put away $10,200 a year, right? The earlier you start, the less you're going to have to worry about this. So if you're a beginner, you can put aside, you can just think about it in terms of percentage of income. You know, 10% is a great number. Personally, I've been putting away more than 25% of my gross income, not my net income after taxes, my gross income since I was 23 years old. That's not true. When I was 23, I put away 13 or 14%. But after that, starting at 25, that's when I started putting away 25%. And it was not hard. I just had to live way below my means. All the things that I've written about in all the books that I've got, that I have written, all of that is built on stuff that Sam and I have done our whole lives together. And it is amazing how after a while, it all starts to steamroll and it starts to go up. So pick a percentage of your income. 10% is a really easy number. Get used to that. Get used to not having that money in your pocket. Put it away right from the top. Make sure it goes away. If you can, then move to 12.5%, then to 15%, then to 20%. Or basically what's going to happen is you leave the number, the percentage the same, your income goes up, and a portion of that raise, we always say, bank the raise, bank the bonus, bank the tax return that you shouldn't be having, right? You shouldn't be getting your cash out of your tax. All good. Then figuring out what you're spending. Everybody spends a little too much. And it's easy when you're young and you don't have anything else and you're going out with friends. And, you know, I knew somebody way back when, he was a trader. He would blow thousands of dollars every night because he wanted to feel like a big shot. So after work, where they were trading in the pits, and he was making a ton of money, but he was spending a ton of money. What a waste of an opportunity. So what he would do is go to a bar and start buying drinks for everybody. And they loved him. Well, who wouldn't love somebody who's buying you drinks all the time? That's great. I mean, it's just a way to kind of, you know, piss away your money. But other than that, great idea. So thinking about your spending is just incredibly important. And you've got to have an accurate picture of your spending. You got to dig into your behavior. You got to think about, you know, what causes you to spend on clothing? Why do you feel like you want to go get a latte or whatever it is? You know, sometimes we're buying things like my friend from 30 years ago just because it makes us feel better. Buying drinks for everybody and having them thank him and think he was a big shot was really important to his psyche. Now, may seem a little thin today, and I'm sure he wishes he had every one of those thousands of dollars that he spent every night. But guess what? Not there anymore. And so you have to think about how you feel when you spend so that you start getting your self-esteem from the amount that you're saving as opposed to the amount that you're spending. Pay yourself first, pay yourself last, right? Pay yourself first means just take it right out of the paycheck, zoom it into your retirement account, into a 401k, into a special savings account. Never let it hit your bank book. Never let it hit your pocket. Money that's in your pocket will get spent. It's a rule, you know, I didn't make up that rule. I'm just telling you that is how it is. And if you think about the amount of money you have in cash in your wallet and what happens to it, you'll realize it evaporates. That's just how cash is. So once you've figured all that out, right, next part of the plan is what kind of an investor are you? Are you a risky investor? Well, with 30, 40, or 50 years to go, there's an argument to be made for putting everything you have into a diversified portfolio in the stock market. You could do an index on total stocks, an index on international funds, and an index on bonds. Now, an index fund on bonds is technically investing in the bond market, but it's out of cash, it's into the market, and you kind of don't think about it again. It's one of those plain vanilla investments. Index mutual funds are cheap to own. They perform year over year. You never beat the market. You meet the market, which means you beat about 90% of all managed mutual funds out there, which is awesome. And when you feel like you get smart enough over the years, you can take extra money and you can put it somewhere else. Because what's going to happen is you're going to start to watch the money add up. Coins. It just adds up. It's amazing how month in, month out, adding to your funds, your retirement accounts, is going to be a big deal. And then finally, if you don't have income, you're not ever going to get to $1 million, right? And so your sense, your ability to make more money, that feeds directly into saving for retirement. And before you know, you're going to be there. 404-872-0750. I'm Elyse Glenk. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. We're going to come back and take your calls next on WSB.
Elyse Glenk, Sundays on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
It's 24 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glenk Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. Let's go to the phones. Marie joins me on the line from Athens. Hi, Marie.
Hi.
What's going on today?
Well, I got a question. I'm not sure how to ask this question, but I moved my mother and father up here from Marietta.
Mm-hmm.
Their house is my mother's on the phone.
So many problems with their house in Marietta?
Yeah, she's listening.
I see. Hi, Mom. Okay, go ahead. You just have to move
sorry.
On.
She's just sighing. But anyway, we moved her up here because the house is in disrepair and like needs central heat, the pipes, everything. It's just completely out of whack. And she's paying her rent with the money she's paying on the utilities there, here.
Mm-hmm.
So she has an equity line she's paying on. The house is paid, but she's paying an equity line. And I just want to make sure she doesn't lose money. She wants her house. And she can't get loans to get it fixed up.
Okay. So her house isn't paid off as she has an equity line. An equity line is a mortgage. So how much is the mortgage for and how much is the house worth?
Okay, the mortgage is, the equity is like $575 a month.
No, how much is the total amount she owes?
About $45,000, $44,000, something like that.
$44,000?
Yeah.
Okay, so you shouldn't think that the house is paid off. The house has a mortgage of $44,000, and how much is the house worth?
Well, it varies. I'm not sure. I mean, her insurance, I think the insurance is what she pays on it, makes the house worth about a, what is it, $100,000 or something, Mom?
Okay, the insurance is irrelevant. The insurance is only about rebuilding costs, and it doesn't even sound like that would be the right thing. You and your mom need more information. And you need to sort of figure out how much the house is worth by talking to some local real estate agents about how much they think the house is worth. If the house is worth, let's just say, $100,000, she's got $55,000 roughly in equity, although some of that would disappear if you tried to sell it. So if she's got it rented, then she's bringing in some income, and she may qualify for a loan based on the rental income. If not, she may be able to take out a larger home equity loan or refinance the home equity loan and be able to use some of the equity that she takes out of it to fix up the house, or not, in which case she should sell the house. I know it's a tough thing to hear, but she should sell the house, most likely, take her $50,000 that she's going to net out of that, and then decide what she wants to do. If she wants to buy a different house, if she wants to live somewhere else, or how that's going to be. But at the moment, she's got a decently mortgaged house that doesn't have central heat and is in disrepair, and she can't even live there. And so you've got some really serious challenges ahead of you. 27 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Gling Show, 404-872-0750. We'll be back in a moment to take more of your calls next on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elyse Gling is live, answering your money and real estate questions. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours, News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
It's 36 minutes after the hour on the Elyse Gling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours on WSB, 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Back to the phones, everybody. Bob joins us on the line from Bethlehem. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Elyse.
What's going on?
I got that refinance with HARP, I think. I think it was the second one, but my interest rate going up.
Is it? How much?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
Oh, yes. Your interest rate is, well, it depends. It depends which kind of a loan you got, but for a lot of people, they got an introductory below market rate of 1.9 to 2.5%.
Okay, I got mine with Wells Fargo, and it was 4.5. It was six.
For some people, they got this super low interest rate that, after a couple of years, two or three, depending on the loan, steps up one percentage point, and then another percentage point, and then it ends up at wherever the mortgage interest rate was at the time that they did the loan. So if you went to 4.5%, you may have had the kind of HARP refinance where it's just a straight 4% and it doesn't change, or 4.5%.
Okay, Elyse, I got another question. I'm underwater in my house, but I got it rented. I got it rented for October.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pay $125 a month, because I'm not going to get what I owe on the mortgage, you know what I'm saying?
So you have to contribute $125 a month just to be even?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And I went to my insurance company. They said I got to have a renter's insurance through my staying with my girlfriend, which she says I'm a financial wreck. So,
I'm sorry, are you a financial wreck? That's not a nice thing for her to say.
But it's true. I mean, she wouldn't say it if it wasn't true, you know what I'm saying?
So she said it in the kindest possible way to motivate you to take charge of your financial life and change. Yes?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I hope she gave you a hug after and said, honey, I do love you.
But I was wondering, is that enough insurance? Because I got renter's insurance at her house, but then I just got dwelling insurance at the rental house. Is that enough?
Well, okay, so it's two separate things, right? Renter's insurance only covers your possessions, contents at her house, which I assume is a rental. She doesn't own it. She's not renting to you, right?
No, she owns it.
She owns it, and she wants you to have renter's insurance because she doesn't want to cover your contents with her homeowner's insurance?
No, my insurance company said I had to have some kind of policy so they could insure the dwelling at my house.
That's different. So there's two different policies. Renter's insurance typically is what a renter or tenant will pay in order to have contents coverage where they live.
Understand.
Dwelling insurance is typically what a landlord, which is you, would buy to cover a house that you are renting to somebody else. Different property, different contents, different thing entirely. So I can't agree that you definitely need renter's insurance because her homeowner's policy may cover you, but you definitely would need dweller's insurance or some sort of insurance for your house now that it is a rental property.
Is that sufficient or do I need more insurance?
Well, I don't know. How much is the dwelling insurance for?
I think like $125, but I'm just worried about them getting hurt on the property, you know what I'm saying?
So you can require your tenants to have renter's insurance, right? The same kind of policy you're buying, which is not very expensive. You can require them to carry a full renter's insurance policy, and you can require them to pay a year up front and to show you proof of insurance. And that will help insure the property. So let's say the property goes up in smoke. Their renter's insurance will cover some portion of that plus their contents. Your dweller's insurance will cover the rest. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am, but I'm worried about them getting hurt, you know, falling off the porch or something.
So now we're talking about something else, which is called liability insurance. So dwelling insurance sometimes has a liability policy buried into it and sometimes not. So you can also buy umbrella liability insurance, which is probably a good idea for somebody like you who has multiple you've got one rental property, you're living somewhere else. But umbrella liability insurance is if they fall off the step and they break a leg and they sue you, you're covered.
Okay.
So that's a third type of insurance policy.
I guess I should fire on that.
Yeah, I would talk to your insurance rep about that. Umbrella liability insurance, when you add it onto a dwelling policy, typically is not that much more expensive. And so you get a whole lot of coverage for not that much money.
Okay, they're the ones that insisted I have renter's insurance. They said they couldn't write their dweller's policy unless I had renter's insurance at the girlfriend's house.
Okay, that doesn't make sense to me at all because renter's insurer. Okay, so maybe you're mistaking the names of these policies, but a renter's policy for you as a tenant of your girlfriend's house, even if you're not technically a tenant, is a different policy than you as a landlord. So I would wonder whether, Bob, you understand the difference that they're trying to explain to you, or if they are explaining anything in it at all well, which they may not be. But here's a place that you can go to learn about these different kinds of coverages. Won't take you very long, and I think if you see it in writing, it'll make much more sense, even than me trying to explain it to you. The Insurance Information Institute, iii.org. That is a nonprofit trade association for the insurance company. They have an excellent website with lots of insurance information on it. And you can go there and read about the different coverages and figure out what you have, what you need, and how to talk in a way that makes sense with your insurance broker.
Do I need to sell that house?
Why would you have to sell it?
I don't have to. I'm just saying, should I?
It's underwater. Do you have enough money to come to the table to break even?
Probably not.
Okay, then don't sell it yet. Don't sell it yet because all you're doing is just piling on. If you sell it and you're underwater by how much?
I'm not really sure. The house needs work, but I owe 116 on it. It's on 3 acres, a bit part of town. So
you owe 116. Let's say it's worth 100. So you're 16,000 in the hole plus the cost of selling. You'll probably be 25,000 in the hole, and all of that means when you go to do your taxes next year, the government's going to say, Bob, it's like you made an extra $25,000, and we want you to pay income tax on that. Because they haven't extended the forgiveness for short sales and for foreclosures. And so you're just going to get a kick in the teeth at tax time next year that just would really be awful.
Well,
so I'm going to say try to rent it, hang on, Hopefully the home is going to appreciate in value, and sorting out the insurance stuff is just going to be a little bit easier once you get the hang of it. Go to iii.org. I'll put this up on my Twitter account in case you forget, iii.org, and read about the different insurance coverages, because there are three different things you're asking about, and none of them have to do with selling your house. 404-872-0750. John joins me on the line from Atlanta. Hi, John.
Hi, Elise. Thank you for taking my call.
You're more than welcome. What's going on today?
Well, I've been listening to you and Clark for years. I liked how you started your show today talking about having a plan, and I've had a plan since I was 25, and I've been executing on it.
How old are you now? You're 33?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was the plan?
To know how much I spent, and then control the expenses, and then figure out ways to bring in more income.
Great.
So that's working really well. My question for you is really more for my parents. My mom is 56, my dad is 61, and they've never had a plan. They've never had a budget. They've never tracked expenses, and they have no idea how much they need for retirement. And I want to have that conversation with them, and I want to help them, but I don't really know how to start that conversation. I just want to get your advice on the best way to do that.
So I love that you're asking this question, because having a conversation like this with your parents takes a huge amount of courage. First, because you can tell it'll be totally unwelcome. Mm-hmm. So more power to you.
Yep.
And secondly, because it's never easy when you know you've figured something out and you know your parents haven't. I mean, it's just never easy to try and help them without seeming that you know all the answers, which is just hard for parents anyway. So, kudos to you. But I think that what you want to do, and do you track your expenses on Quicken, QuickBook, Mint? What do you do?
I use Mint.
Okay. And how's that working for you? Well?
It's perfect. I love it.
Okay. So Mint was bought by Quicken, and we're into it, a couple of years ago. And the guy who, you know, started it made out like a banshee. Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
But Mint has, like, spreadsheets and a website, and it's a really nice user interface. And so have you ever told your parents you use it?
I have, and I've actually showed it to them, and they thought it was just the best thing ever. But they're a little intimidated by it, and they're not sure. They're not very trusting, so they're scared of the Internet and, you know, things like that.
Okay. Well, that's very common for people of their generation. I am of their generation. Well, not really. But so I think what you have to do is you have to start again, and you have to say, look, Mint is unbelievably useful. Here's what it does. I'd like to, as this year's birthday anniversary, 2014 present, whatever it's going to be,
mm-hmm.
I would like to take this on for you. And I would like to help get you to a place where I'm working with you to get all of your expenses up on here. I know it seems really intimidating. Once it's all up there, it's so easy to maintain it. And I'll help you maintain it for the next, pick a number of months or year or whatever it is, until uh-huh. you get used to the idea that this isn't going to hurt you. It's going to help you. And I know that this is a place that, you know, you've had trouble in the past, and I want to help secure a solid future for you so that you have a chance to enjoy the golden years that you have always earned and deserved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I want to show my love for you.
I wanted to also get them some time with a CFP to help, once they know how much they're spending, to then be able to plan for their retirement, how much they should be saving. Is there a good way to do that?
So start with Mint.
Okay.
And understand exactly what the strengths and weaknesses of their financial situation. And
okay.
once you really get that, and that'll take about probably 6 months.
Right.
To really get everything up and understand where the bodies are buried and all the other stuff. And you have to, you start with the actual accounts, and then you move to whatever work stuff they've had over the years, and you may have to move some of that into IRAs and explain all of that to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to start talking about retirement and what they might get with Social Security, and if they have any pensions, and if there's any
mm-hmm.
military money coming to them, and any inheritances they may get,
mm-hmm.
and their house. And so that'll take you like 6 months to a year. And at
right.
that point in time, they're going to be so used to talking to you about money.
Mm-hmm.
In this lovely non-judgmental tone that you have, which I can hear,
right.
that I think they're going to be open to saying, now I want to take the next step with you, and I want to talk to a certified financial planner. And somebody I've been talking to about me and my money is whoever it is.
Right.
And so you should start by finding somebody for yourself and going through that process and using your own money and savings and everything to understand. And then listen to the questions that that planner is asking you, because that those are the questions he'll ask your parents. And then working together, you can get your parents to the next stage. And I have to tell you, in all my years of doing this and filling in for Clark and hosting this show, listening to you and the love that you have for your parents, John, absolutely moves me. Because there are just so few kids, and I say this, you know, not a kid, you're 33, but there are so few people in this world who are able to be non-judgmental, walk the fine line between being non-judgmental and not wanting to seem greedy, like they're just waiting for their parents to die and all the rest. You seem like you are truly moved by this desire to help them achieve something that they've never been able to do for themselves. And truly, if you can bring that to their lives, that is such the greatest gift that you could give back to your parents as a thank you for the wonderful job I can tell that they did in raising you. So, John, reach out to me at questions@thinklink.com. Anytime you have more questions, remind me of this conversation. I will help you in any way that I can do this wonderful thing for your parents. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glank. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
It's 12:55 on the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. Coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit more about HARP and what's going on there, and I'm going to give you a few more tips about how to make or save $1 million over your life, which I think is such a great number and a great starting place. Sabrina joins me on the line now from College Park. Hey, Sabrina.
Hello. How are you, Elise?
I'm great, thanks. What's going on in your world?
My husband and I, we're in the process of purchasing our first home, and we bought it at $300K. Our plan is to pay at 3.5% interest rate. Our plan is to pay the first $1K off in 5 years or less, and
the
refinance the remaining two.
Hold on.
Is that possible? Can we do that?
Sabrina, I'm a little confused. You bought the house and paid $300,000. You have a loan for 3.5%.
Right.
And you want to prepay the first $100,000?
No, we want to. We're going to take our own money and just, right, prepay. Right. We're going to put the money on the back end.
We're
going to make, like, double payments for the first year.
Okay.
To bring the mortgage payment down, to bring the principal payment down.
Okay, that's not exactly how it works.
Okay.
So when you make a double payment, which essentially means you're going to make an extra 12 payments in the year.
Yes.
All of that should go towards your principal, which is great. But
right.
It won't change the amount of the payment. What it does do is it makes more of each subsequent payment go towards more paying down your principal faster. And so instead of taking 30 years to pay off the loan, maybe it'll only take you 20 or 22. You'd have to do the numbers. But it doesn't change what the payment is going forward.
Right. I didn't mean the payments, but I'm saying with such a low interest rate at 3.5%, is it possible at the fifth or sixth year to refinance it to a 15-year loan with that interest rate?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It'll depend where interest rates are at that time.
Uh-huh.
But if interest rates go up, maybe not. But certainly what you're doing now is, you know, you would be on track to get that payment down, maybe to a 15-year loan as it is, maybe not. But to figure it out, I suggest you go to my website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Go to the tools section, and there's a section there on prepaying your mortgage, and you can put in the numbers and how much extra you're paying every month, and it'll tell you exactly how long it'll take you to pay off your loan. Now, it may take less, and you may qualify for a 15-year mortgage even after a year, but you have to see where interest rates are. Right now, you are at an incredible 3.5%, and even if you went to a 15-year, you would still be at 3.5%, no lower. So it may make more sense to just keep prepaying now than switching over to a 15-year. If you can afford the prepayments, you can afford to keep it up, and the interest rate would be the same. So you have to carefully look at it. Sabrina, thanks so much for your call. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours, 404-872-0750. Back in a moment with more on WSB.
Elise Glink, Sundays on News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
7 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750 on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. On Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. You can also find me at expertrealestatetips.com and thinklink.com. So we're talking today about having a plan. Plans are so incredibly important, even when they seem outrageous, even when they seem impossible to achieve. One of the things that I've learned in my years on this planet is that if you just keep moving in any direction, if you've been stuck, you will soon be unstuck. Because the whole concept of being stuck, whether you're stuck financially, you're stuck emotionally, you're stuck career-wise, just being stuck, it's so very difficult to get your arms around this whole idea. And it's easy to become mired in debt, or mired in a mortgage that isn't working out, in a house, in a relationship, in a career. And inertia sets in. And so when you have a plan and you are stuck, what that means is you're taking steps in a direction that will get you somewhere. And as I often say on the show, when you're really stuck, any step in any direction, even if it turns out to be a backwards direction, is actually a step in the right direction because you're actually moving again. And motion is so helpful. Just getting something moving. I was with one of my consulting clients in New York this week, just trying to get it moving, the project moving again. They found themselves stuck in a place where they're trying to raise money, they're trying to get their idea in motion, and they're stuck. And I tried to describe it as a big, huge stone wheel, weighs thousands of pounds. All we're trying to do is get the wheel going. Because no matter how big and how heavy the wheel is, once you get it going, there's motion. And with motion comes all sorts of good things. So having a plan, a financial plan, a plan for your life is so incredibly important. It helps you in all sorts of ways. And before you know it, 10 years have passed. And if you've been putting away money, even $25 a week, after 10 years, you're going to have a significant chunk of money. And I've watched this happen for my employees. As they become eligible for their 401ks at our company, they start putting away $25 a week. And then it's $50 a week. And then it's, you know, a couple hundred dollars a month. And suddenly, before they know it, they leave to go on to a different job and they've got $5,000, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 in the account. It's amazing how quickly you can put a plan in action and how quickly you start to make strides. So having a plan is the place to start. If you don't know how to have a plan, you can go to thinklink.com and you can work on it and read about it and start playing around with some of the tools. Because having a plan is where all the action is. 404-872-0750. It's 10 minutes past the hour. Doug joins me on the line from Marietta. Hi, Doug.
Hey, Lisa. How are you?
You know, I'm good today. What about you?
Good, good. Listen, my wife and I, we're both retired. Currently, my wife still does a little travel agency work. But we've done good with our in investments over the years. And we're at a point where we're currently renting because we sold our house about a year ago. And actually got to a point where we couldn't really buy a house that quick. It was a very short period of time. But anyway, our goal was really to get down to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And what we really want to do, what we're thinking about doing now is that of maybe buying an investment property down there and with the hopes that maybe we could move into that later on or just use it as an investment property until we do. And my concern is that All right, we have a financial advisor who's already said we could do that. We have some of our money is really cash money, which means we don't have to get into our 401k.
Uh-huh.
What my question is I'm a little bit concerned about we're thinking about buying a condo. What kind of resource could we use to make sure that we're buying something that might be a good investment?
So Florida's really an interesting market. There are still some amazing opportunities out there for, you know, retirement income. There are some great vacation properties that have not completely come back in value. But you have to figure out what you're willing to do and how you're willing to go along with the flow. So being an investor in property is very different from being an owner-occupied. And you and your wife have to figure out if that's really where you'd want to go. What often happens is people put this plan into action, right? I'm going to buy an investment property and then we're going to move into it, only to figure out they don't really want to move there. So the first thing I would say to you is, are you sure that's where you want to go?
No, because if it was the right piece of property, we may end up, you know, just keeping it as an investment property and move someplace else. We're currently in a 2-year lease right now that we can extend for another period of time because we want to stay in the Atlanta area. So, no, we aren't.
Okay. So then the question is, if you want to spend some time in Florida, why you don't just want to rent the property that you want to spend the time in? But if you, because you're, if you have an investment property, you're not really going to be able to use it more than just a couple of weeks a year. So then it's really about, you know, all the things that go into rental, right? What makes it hot? Well, Florida, near a beach, there's high insurance costs. You got to be in a stable place. Who's going to do the landlording, the renting for it? How much are you going to pay for that? How much do you want the property to go? Do you want to buy something and fix it up and sell it, that kind of thing down the line in a couple of years? You know, you have to think, do you want a condo? Do you want a single family house? You probably get a better return on your investment with a single family house that needs a ton of work. However, that's faster. But then on the long run, condo in a great building, in a great location, on the water, with water views is probably, you know, perennial investment in Florida. But who wants to go there? So you have to pick a city where people want to go. It's easy in and out, either for driving or flying. Those are the kinds of questions that I would ask. And then what are you going to get in rent? And how much do you have to pay to keep it?
Well, that's a good question. We do. We currently go down there for a month or two a year, but we have a resource to already rent a place down there until we, you know, if we should get an investment piece of property.
But why wouldn't you invest in Atlanta? You live in Atlanta. You want to stay in Atlanta. Why wouldn't you just invest there?
That's a very good point. Maybe that's something we really should consider.
I mean, everybody goes, oh, I'm going to buy an investment property in Florida. But really, why? It's far away, so if you have to manage it, it's awkward to lease. It's awkward to maintain. You've got to get a local loan. You've got to work with a real estate broker over the phone. How are you guys going to go look at property? I mean, the whole thing is, like, crazy. So you live in Atlanta. You tell me you want to stay in Atlanta. So why don't you go buy a place? And there's loads and loads of properties to buy in Atlanta. And the rents are good, and the prices are still pretty low. Why wouldn't you just go get one in town?
Hmm. Well, that's a very good opportunity. Although our thought is that we really eventually may want to live down there, but
you should buy something when you're ready to live down there, because I guarantee you, where you want to live is going to be different from where you want to rent, because where you rent is a rental community, right? So you've got a lot of transient action back and forth, people who are there, screaming kids, it's vacation time. That's not a place that most people who want to retire to Florida want to live. So it's a very different mindset.
Good. Well, that's probably a very good piece of advice, and I think that's something we were kind of considering, but sounds like it may be a good piece of advice.
Why don't you guys think about it a little bit more? And then I would put on some paper, do a little bit of a chart about why you want to rent, what you think you could get out of it, managing the property, who's going to be doing it. And Sam and I are like the poster children for landlording. We should own hundreds and hundreds of units, but we don't. You want to know why? Because even though Sam is a real estate attorney and I've built a whole career on my real estate expertise, he hates managing rental properties. So he hates it. He just hates it. He'll do the leases and he manages it, but he doesn't like it. He's discouraged. He's like, let's invest our money elsewhere. And so you have to, at the bottom line, decide, what kind of assets you want to be investing in, how you want to manage those assets, who is going to manage it right now. Your wife's still working a little bit. You know, maybe, and then at the end of the day, you have to look at the opportunity cost because it takes time and money. So are there other things that you could do with that cash that would not be as time intensive as real estate can be? It could be very little time or it could be a lot of time. And how are you going to do that? And how are you going to get smart about who you, you know, have to rent the place and where it's going to be in Atlanta? But at least in Atlanta, you know Atlanta. You live in Atlanta. You're staying in Atlanta. You know the ins and outs of the neighborhoods. Now you're going to start evaluating two coastlines in Florida to find exactly the right place and the right kind of community and the right agent and all this. It's like so much work for so little gain.
Yeah, sure sounds like it. Well, some really good advice, and I think it's something we really should consider, and thank you for your help.
You're welcome, Doug. Let me know what happens. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. You know, it's so funny. People always think that getting a rental property in Florida is just the natural thing. You know, the Georgia Mountains are a great rental area. Southern North Carolina is a great rental area. South Carolina is a great rental area. I mean, you live in Atlanta. There are so many places that are not retirement communities, but in Atlanta, you've got neighborhoods you know. You've got resources, people, mortgage companies, painters, you know, people can help you fix it up. All that stuff is there and you know it. So take the easy way out. Investing doesn't have to be that hard. If you invest in a rental property near to where you live, I guarantee it's going to be an easier thing to do and far less work than if you start renting another state away. It's 18 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. The number 404-872-0750. Call now. We've got a couple of open lines. And when we come back, we're going to do a quick prize pack and then go back to take your calls next on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live, answering your money and real estate questions. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours, News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB.
It's 24 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours on WSB. So let's do our family prize pack. We have a family four-pack of tickets to the 82nd Annual North Georgia State Fair, September 18th through the 28th at the Jim R. Miller Park in Marietta, and a pair of tickets to see Whoopi Goldberg, that's awesome, on September 20th at the Cobb Energy Performing Arts Center, and a pair of tickets to the Petit Le Mans, something for everybody in this prize pack, October 1st through the 4th at Road Atlanta. The prize pack value, $182. We're going to give it away to the fifth caller, 404-741-0750. That's our prize pack line. Be nice to Crystal, and she's going to take your call. 25 minutes past the hour, Steve joins me on the line. Hey, Steve, what's going on in your world?
Hi, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I want to make a comment on the caller you just had a little while ago, and it drives me right to my question. She was talking about her case where she had a new house and a loan for 3.5%, I think she said. Mm-hmm. They were talking about doubling up payments. And I think back to the time when I first bought my first house in the late 90s, where I was just dying to lock in at 10.25%.
No, my first loan was 11.75%. Well, I felt lucky to have it.
Yeah, so I'm just saying to myself, why would I ever want to pay off a 3.5% loan? I would like to keep that for the rest of my life. So
for
it falls
sure.
down to the, my question ends up being, what's your philosophy on paying off early money like that? Because in my experience, because I do have a plan, I started saving early to never make up for lost time, and I would much rather take those extra payments and put them in the bank. My particular case that I have is I'm about 7 years from retiring, but my refi loan, which I have a 4.25%, isn't going to be done until maybe 4 years after I retire. So, you know, I'm trying to think, should I time it?
Well, you're in a little bit of a different spot, right? Because where you are when you retire, if you're going to have your income drop because of retirement, not everybody does, then you might want to just be done and pay off that loan early simply to have freer cash flow and more options in retirement. But, you know, to your point, right, Sabrina has this loan at 3.5%, and she wants to make double payments just to get ahead. Well, I get that. Locking in this mortgage, she is going to someday be so happy she's got money that she has borrowed at 3.5%, where almost anything that you can do in a true investment situation is going to be returning a lot higher. We have a loan right now at 3.25%. It was a 15-year loan that we chose. And, you know, Sam says, I'm, like, not even really prepaying this mortgage. And yet, because, you know, we were just maintaining the same amount of money every month that we were putting in, which was a little above what the required amount was, we're going to pay it off way too soon. So I'm with you. If you can borrow money that cheap, you may just want to keep a hold of it for a while. And for you, you just have to, now that you're going into retirement, decide how much cash you're going to have and whether you want to just get rid of it to free up cash flow so you can do something else. 404-872-0750 is our number. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. Be back in a moment with more of the Elise Kling Show on WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Kling is live, here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on News 95.5 and AM 750. WSB.
It's 1:36 on the Elise Kling Show, Rebuilding America, one house at a time. On WSB, Belinda Skelton is next. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. Lon joins me on the line. Hey there. Hello, Lon?
Hello.
Hello. You are on the Elise Kling Show with Elise Kling, shockingly enough.
Nice to hear you. I have I've got about 2 or 3 years left, maybe till retirement, and that's not that could handle. I'm at that age. Let's put it that way. I've okay. got three or four properties that are at a 6.75% interest rate.
Uh huh.
I've got good cash flow on my other ones. What's the smart move of the day? Go ahead and pay off the 6.75% loans, or continue buying?
So I would continue buying. And the reason is that you're getting a break on that interest rate simply because you're able to write off the interest you pay. So if you pay off those loans, then all of that income now gets taxed at an income tax rate versus, you know, being able to offset some of it. So I would continue to buy as long as the buying is good and you can figure out a place to invest that money.
Okay, and that makes sense also. But from what I've been reading recently is this, and however Obama's going to play his tax game, the deduction is really not all that attractive from what I've seen. Yes, no?
Deduction for what?
Interest, income tax. Interest deductions, the home style.
Yeah, but you're not, okay, that's a separate issue, right? The preserving the mortgage interest deduction for homeowners who are owner-occupants is a different discussion than you being able to write off interest in a business that is called investing in real estate. So you're allowed to offset your income versus expenses. And that's what you're doing, and throwing in Obama's tax thing, that is not changing, and there's no plans that I know of to change that. So it's a completely separate issue, Lon. Good news for you, though.
You always bring me good news, Elise.
Well, you're just flattering me on a football weekend. Thank you so much for your call. Enjoy it. 404-872-0750. Lee joins me on the line from Atlanta. Lee, do I have good news for you, too?
Well, I certainly hope so. Can you hear me?
I can. What's your question?
Well, my question has to do with vacation plans and, you know, timeshares.
Uh-huh.
So my wife and I are getting ready for retirement here in a few years, and we have some different views on what we want to do in retirement and trying to find ways that can, you know, maximize what we both want to do.
Okay, so this is where a lot of couples, like, have a real problem, because you're on the same page, raising kids, all the stuff that goes into a log marriage, and you finally get to retirement, And, you know, it completely broke up my friend Brad's marriage because he wanted to travel the world and she wanted to go home to her family in the rural lands and play pinochle. And it was like they couldn't come to an agreement. So what do you want to do and what does she want to do?
Well, so my view of retirement would be keeping my home and having a nice home on a lake or beach or something like that.
A second home or a vacation home?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, and she wants
and
to do what?
She would like to travel the world. So, and I like that idea, too, and I certainly understand how, you know, getting locked into a piece of property that you feel obligated to go to, you know, and maybe try to rent out from time to time. But it just seemed like the vacation plans, you know, like the Marriott's and the Hilton's, offered a little bit of a compromise where it gave you a lot of flexibility to, you know, to go to different places in the world and, and still feel some ownership, if you will.
Let me disabuse you of vacation plans. I am not a fan of vacation plans. I'm not a fan of timeshares. Clark Howard doesn't like them either. The reason is that you are paying them for the privilege of then paying them to stay in their properties. It's terrible. Timeshares you can never get rid of. If I had a dollar for everybody who's cried to me over the years about their timeshare that they wish they hadn't bought, I would be fully retired and then some. So the vacation plan idea where you're going to give them a huge chunk of money and then you're going to get X number of points that you can then spend at hotels all over the world, Sam and I have done the math on this. And let me tell you, it is not at all like owning, and it is far cheaper for you to rent a suite in the very same hotel that you're going to use points to stay in than it would be to get into the vacation plan. I promise you, it will never, ever, ever break even for you. It will be frustrating to try and figure it out. So that said, let me propose a different plan for you and your wife.
There you go.
Go find a house on a lake that she can fall in love with and say to her, honey, 4 times a year, we'll go anywhere you want to go. And then we'll go to this place that you like as much as I like it. And eventually we're going to get rid of our house. But the house on the lake can be anywhere that you think. I'm open to suggestions. If you don't like the lake that's near where we live now, you know, and we're going to both be retired, let's talk about what lake, you know, or what location would work for you. And then you talk all about kids, if you have it, and grandkids, and what the plan is, and what you see your day-to-day life being, and all the rest. Because even if you travel the world, you get tired, right? I went to Peru for 2 weeks. I was thrilled to come back. I just couldn't wait. I was ready to come back, and then I've enjoyed this wonderful 3 weeks of being still in vacation mode. That's how great travel is, but it's all-consuming, and you want to go and explore the world. I get that. You want to have a place where you can look at some water, read the paper, and enjoy your grandkids, and I get that, too. So you guys need to talk to figure out where that place is going to be, that she's going to be happy, you're going to be happy, and come to a meeting of the minds. And all the money that you would spend, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, buying into that vacation plan, you're going to use that to travel the world and do some really interesting and unusual things. And my guess is what's going to happen is you're going to get the bug about travel, and she's going to get the bug about watching a lake and enjoying your lives together. What do you think about that plan?
Well, I think that's a really good compromise, and what you talked about the timeshares and point system was part of my fear. But I think the other thing is I also get a little bit concerned about, you know, locking into one piece of property, you know, and it could be here in the Atlanta area, but you know, what about all these beautiful lakes and properties in other places in the United States? You know, it'd be really nice to, you know, almost have like a timeshare and 4 or 5 different ones, if you will. You
well,
know?
How about instead of that, why don't you just rent a different place every year in a different location? That actually is the way to get both of what you want. Because, you know, my mind is you just don't want to be locked into 4 different places. You're not going to want to go to those same 4 places for the rest of your life. And locking yourself in now is going to change. So what if you say to your wife, look, here are my list of 10 places around the country I wouldn't mind spending a winter. Give me your 10 places. Let's see if anything's on the list together. And then let's together explore all the places around the world that you might want to do it. Sam and I, on our bucket list, renting a house in Tuscany for a summer, 2 months, where our friends and family and everybody else can come visit us, and then we can explore Tuscany by bicycle. Like, that's on our bucket list, and we're going to do it before we're too old. One day you may hear me doing this. Oh, wait, breaking news. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay, well, you have...
Atlanta's 24-hour news button is News 95.5 and AM 750. Breaking news from the WSB 24-hour news desk.
This is John Lewis live in the WSB News Center. The SWAT standoff that was taking place in Cobb County now coming to an end. WSB's Pete Combs is on the scene with the latest, Pete.
John, this does just appear to end as police blocked off traffic on Oakdale Road and then went into the house. Now, I am told by relatives that the young man who was the cause of the standoff had with him his baby and the baby's mother in the house. The baby was carried out from the house by SWAT officers and appears to be okay, but that was the initial indication. We're still waiting for final word. As to the other two people who were inside, at this point, John, we don't know. But this 13-hour-long standoff is now over. The question is, who survived? We'll have more details on this coming up in just a bit. Live in Smyrna, Pete Combs, WSB.
So once again, the SWAT standoff in Cobb County has come to an end. Police say it was a man and a woman, along with an infant in the house, the infant taken out of that home. As far as the conditions of those involved, that's yet to be seen. John Lewis reporting live in the WSB News Center.
46 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. So we were on the phone with Lee talking about how he and his wife are going to be going into retirement, and they seem to have very different views on retirement. And he's thinking about vacation plans because he wants to be in different places, and she wants to travel the world, but he kind of wants to be in a house with a lake. And we were just getting to a really interesting discussion when we broke in for news. But here's the point I want to make to Lee and to everybody else in this position. Having a plan for your life on how you're going to get to $1 million is the same kind of planning that you have to go through developing this plan for retirement. If you get to retirement and then all of a sudden wake up and go, I don't know what to do with myself or my spouse anymore, it's a recipe for disaster. And you guys are going to get stuck in the mud, not get along, not enjoy yourselves. And you've worked so hard for it. You know, this is the fruit of the labor for the plan. So you have to plan again and figure it out. So if Lee wants to live in different places every winter, instead of going with a vacation plan, you can now rent homes everywhere. You can do Airbnb everywhere in the world. You can decide, like Sam and I have talked about, renting a fabulous house in Tuscany for a summer, for a month or two. You'll pay less to do that than you would, and you'll be in a real house, than you would if you owned a property and then rented it out the other 10 months of the year. So sit down, talk to your spouse, make a list of all the places you might want to live and the places that he or she might want to live, see what's common, break it down even further. What exactly do you like to do every day? What do you like to do every day? And you may just find common ground that you can build a plan for your next 20 or 30 years, because that's how it goes for most people. You're in your mid to late 60s. You could literally live another 20 to 30 years in retirement, and you really want to enjoy it. And the time to enjoy it is the first 10 to 15 years of the retirement. Don't wait until you're 85 and then think you're going to go travel the world. Travel the world at 65 or 70. It's going to be a whole lot more fun. 404-872-0750, 48 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show. We'll be back in a moment with more of your questions on WSB.
Elise Glink, Sundays on News 95.5 and AM 750, WSB. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours.
It's 1:55 on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on WSB. 404-872-0750. You know, you can find me online during the week at thinkglink.com or expertrealestatetips.com. And you can always send questions to questions@thinklink.com. Coming up in the next week or two, I guess it's going to be a couple of weeks, I'm going to be taping a new show, a video show, half an hour, for Wit Nation, which is Grant Cardone. He's been a guest on the show before. He's starting a new website, witnation.com, for wit for whatever it takes. Could also be witty, but witnation.com. And the show is going to talk about how to make big money in real estate. So a lot of the stuff that we talk about now, but there'll be an opportunity for you to interact, ask questions, send in a video question, and talk back and forth on the show as well. And so if you're interested in that, send me an email at questions@thinklink.com and let me know if what we can do to help. That's, as you know, the whole mission of my career, helping you make smarter decisions with your money. And making big money in real estate just falls right along with that. So in that same vein, I want to encourage you to enter the Equifax Finance blog contest on financial wellness. What you need to do is just take a picture, any picture, maybe you've already taken it, of what financial wellness means to you, and then upload it at the Equifax Finance blog, blog.equifax.com. I've already put up the link on my Twitter feed. Go there, just enter. You could win $1,000, $500, $250, or you could, there's some other prizes as well. So I encourage you to do that, because anytime you can think about financial wellness and what it means to you and then take a step forward, that's even better. 404-872-0750. Vanita joins me on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Vanita. Vanita? Vanita, I hear you. Can you hear me? I don't know where Vanita is. Maybe she, let's try this one more time. Vanita, welcome to the program.
I can't hear you.
Vanita? All right. Well, Vanita, if you can hear us, you're going to have to call back, because I'm not sure that you are going, we can't hear you, and clearly you're in a bad cell. 404-872-0750 is our number at the station. So, coming up next week, we have more information for you about all of the stuff that goes into financial wellness. How do you improve your financial life? I'm going to talk about all the different ways that you can do it. There are some wonderful resources at the Equifax Finance blog and at thinklink.com, expertrealestatetips.com. And if you haven't actually been to my YouTube channel anytime recently, you might want to go, because we are producing all kinds of video every single week. All of it designed to help you make smarter decisions with your money, understand where you are and where you want to be in the world and what it's going to take to get you there. So next week, picturing financial wellness, how can you improve your financial life? This is going to be our plan of action through September, as we help you develop a plan to get $1 million into your retirement by the time that you retire, and then some. And in the meantime, I'll see you online at Twitter @Glink, thinklink.com, expertrealestatetips.com, or at witnation.com.